I'm Carl Smith, and this is Elmer Street, the North Side. The American Dream. When you hear that, what comes to your mind? For me, I grew up listening to Motown love songs back when I was a teenager, and I call the American Dream the lover's dream. To fall in love, get married, have kids, buy a house, build a home, see your children have a better future, a better life than your own. That's what all the old folks were talking about when I was growing up. This is what I call the dreams of lovers. But what if the path to your dreams has roadblocks that are almost insurmountable? Institutional, systemic roadblocks, cultural roadblocks, social obstacles of nearly every type you could imagine, all there preventing you from achieving your dreams. These are the types of barriers or roadblocks every African American faces in our American system of institutional racism. In his poem, Harlem, renowned poet and author Langston Hughes wrote, "What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Or maybe it just sags like a heavy load? Or does it explode?" In the case of a group of African American families in South Bend, Indiana, the dream coalesced into a plan of action sheltered in secrecy, supported by great minds and even greater hearts to fight for justice and the realization of these lovers' dreams. In her book, Better Homes of South Bend, An American Story of Courage, the author Gabrielle Robinson recounts the story of a group of African Americans in the city of South Bend who formed a co-op shrouded in secrecy to fulfill their dreams of owning homes. She recounts the birth of the effort to build their dream in this way. After much thought and prayer, they finally got the courage to translate their dreams into action. They prepared themselves carefully, consulted widely. They also sought the advice of their ministers, since they were all devout churchgoers belonging to South Bend's many African American churches. This lengthy process allowed everyone's opinion to be heard and all fears to be aired. Only then were they ready to make their move in secret.
At first, I thought of this book mainly as a historical document, which it is, you know, to tell us something more about our own history here in South Bend.
That's Gabrielle Robinson, a retired English professor and author of the book Better Homes of South Bend, An American Story of Courage.
But as I was writing it, and especially by the time I had come to the end, I saw that it has significance way beyond just a historical document. It has really important lessons for us today. How very hard it is to bring about even a small bit of social change. What an enormous effort it takes. What a huge courage. I mean, these folks really stepped out of their comfort zone.
I was in college when Keith Bingham, the son of one of the founding members of the Better Homes of South Bend Co-op, enrolled to complete his master's degree at Indiana University. I hadn't seen him for years, and we were just hanging out on a Saturday night, listening to some jazz, reminiscing about growing up. He made what was almost an offhanded comment about Elmer Street. He said, I hope the story of what our parents went through gets told. He said, think about it. How did these 20 black families fight the system and build homes in that white neighborhood? That was the first time I can recall wondering what was the origin of the community we called Elmer Street. Back then, we were just kids. We were just having a good time, being kids, playing, passing time. As we got older, we'd have house parties, first kisses, innocent stuff, so many memories. Whenever I would speak with one of the kids, it was just like the conversation I was having with Keith, almost like being catapulted back in time. All of do you remember when this happened or remember when that happened? But nothing about Elmer Street was just in the past. You kept in touch, went to family reunions, funerals, shared a laugh when you saw each other at the store. To this day, the impact pulls at your heart like an old photograph. Kids take for granted the world they find themselves in unless you know the story. And if you don't know history, the hard work of your parents to build a life for you is lost to time. But history was for grown-ups, right? That's until you're curious. What was the story? Gabrielle Robinson recounts how her book was written in large part due to the persistence of Leroy Cobb. Mr. Cobb, at the founding of the co-op, was its youngest member. He was only 20 years old when he and his wife, Margaret, joined the co-op. Ms. Robinson relates the many times he urged her to write the story, recalling he was polite but insistent, emphasizing the historical importance of the story. He was a representative for the families of the co-op to future generations. Leroy Cobbs' family was a part of the first wave of the Great Migration, referring to the millions of African Americans who moved from the South to the North. The first wave came when the United States began preparing for World War I, the second wave as we prepare for World War II. The majority of the Better Homes Group were a part of this migration. While South Bend was not as desirable a location as Chicago, South Bend did have a large number of industrial jobs. This included Studebaker, where a number of the co-op men worked. Finding work was one problem. Where to live was another. That problem, where to live, was largely out of the control of most African Americans. Leroy Cobbs' story was not unique. He attended Linden Elementary School, which had opened in 1890 to serve the children of Polish and Hungarian immigrants. Mr. Cobb often talked about how he felt his family and neighbors shared a bond, all of them feeling as if they were newcomers. The African Americans new to the North, the Polish and Hungarians new to America. Mr. Cobb remembers there were only a couple of black families in his neighborhood. Everyone was poor, European immigrants, and African Americans. Population trends naturally shifted, and Linden Elementary became entirely African American by the end of the 1950s. Years later, Linden would be ground zero in the effort to racially integrate schools in South Bend. Mr. and Mrs. Cobbs, they were dear friends of my own parents, Albert and Sue Smith. My parents were also a part of the Great Migration. Ironically, he and his wife, Margaret, moved into their new home November 1, 1953, just a month after I was born. My dad, Albert, grew up in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. He always told the story that when he was 22 or 23, a friend's family was moving to South Bend and asked if he wanted to come along to help with the long drive. At the time, the job prospects were not bright in Pine Bluff, so like so many others looking for a better future, my dad agreed to come along. He always laughed telling the story of him asking if there were any jobs in South Bend and his friend telling him, oh yeah, many jobs, plenty of jobs. They hit the road shortly after World War II ended. My dad told me he stayed in South Bend 6 months, unable to find steady employment, and eventually returned to Pine Bluff. He decided to give it another try in the following year. Our mother, Sue, was from a small town in Tennessee called Bells, about an hour east of Jackson. Her mother, my grandmother, died from consumption when my mother was 2 years old, and her father, my grandfather, moved to South Bend in the 1930s. My mother stayed behind, raised by my grandparents until she was a teen. She would later join my grandfather in South Bend, attending Central High School. While our mother was a teen, she went back and forth between South Bend and Bells, Tennessee, living with my grandfather and at times with her uncle in Chicago. Finally, she settled in South Bend, and as fate would have it, our parents, both my mom and dad, started working at Zeiger's Cleaners on the same day. They would eventually fall in love, get married, and carve out a future. It is the familiar story of love, hope, and dreams, true for so many families and manifestly true for the families who would become a part of the Better Homes of South Bend Co-op. Their hopes of building a brighter future included owning their own homes. In order to do this, they would have to break the walls of systemic racism and discrimination, which prevented African American families from owning homes in South Bend.
Well, I mean, again, I think, first of all, we have to look at the history. That's really important.
That's Judith Fox, a clinical professor of law at the University of Notre Dame, where she leads Notre Dame's Economic Justice Clinic.
So, I mean, I checked the numbers just yesterday because I knew I was going to be talking to you, and I was curious to see where we were. And the most recent statistics, about 67% of all Americans are homeowners. But if you break that down further, 75% of white families are homeowners and only 46% of African-American families. So you can see the huge divide there, right? Fewer than half of African-American families are able to own their own home. And I think I go back to, you have to understand the history, right? So owning our home was really not a norm in America until after the Depression. So very few people own their homes. The way mortgages were structured, it was very hard to own your home. And after the Great Depression, because there were so many left homeless by the Great Depression, the federal government decided to step in and try to help people own their homes. And that's when they created the Home Owners Loan Corporation, which is a way to lend money to people. But the problem with that was the Home Owner Loan Corporation created the maps that we now call redlining, right? They created maps where they drew literally red lines around certain neighborhoods and said, you can't lend in these neighborhoods because there are blacks there. And it was that explicit. If there were a few minorities, it was like a yellow zone, you know, caution zone. But if there was a high minority, and the idea was we aren't going to guarantee any loans to African-Americans because those are dangerous loans. So that kept out African-Americans really up until the Civil Rights Acts of the 60s, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got that period of time when many people, you know, after World War II, many vets came back, were able to buy homes. That's really what spurred sort of the growth of the middle class. But African-American vets who came back didn't have that same experience. There were some hearings held in South Bend in the 60s, which I think are really telling. And one of the stories that, you know, sticks in my mind was of Dr. Shambly, who was at Normandy, you know, fought for the country, came back, but was unable to buy a home in South Bend because he was African-American. He had to actually have a white friend buy the home and switch it over to him. But more telling to me of that experience is I did a presentation on some of these stories that happened here in South Bend several years ago. And I just so happened to have Dr. Shambly's grandson in my class. I didn't know that. And he was asking me why I had a picture of his grandfather for this presentation. Here, just one generation removed, he didn't know the story. He didn't know what his grandfather had gone through. And when I was telling these stories, I realized that so many of our young people don't know their own history and don't know the history of this discrimination.
That's Judith Fox. She is a national expert on foreclosure, predatory lending, and fair housing. If you want to build a better future, you need economic opportunities, goes without saying. While South Bend had factories like Oliver Manufacturing Company, Bendix, Singer Sewing, most employed few, if any, African Americans. Studebaker was by far the employer with the largest number of African Americans, employing over 700 during the 1950s. For members of the Better Homes of South Bend Co-op, home ownership was more than a vague concept. It was and is a part of the basic pillar upon which to build the future. It solves not only the obvious need for shelter, a place to live, but home ownership has and continues to be a principal element of wealth building, a significant source of household wealth. It is foundational. The growing number of workers created a demand for housing made even more critical given the limited inventory of available housing. If we look at the map right now and look at the 1700 and 1800 blocks of North Elmer Street, you would consider that to be on the west side of South Bend. When I grew up, we always referred to it as the north side, growing up in the 1200 block of North Olive. Not many associated African-American home ownership with the north side. Growing up, almost all of our neighbors were white, and I had no clue that the reason for this was that Lincoln Way West was the unofficial north-south boundary. There were not to be any homes north of Lincoln Way sold to blacks. This was the backdrop for the meeting that took place on a Sunday afternoon in May 1950. It was the alignment of dreams, the dreams of a brighter future for themselves and their children. For these families, it would be a fight against the systems of injustice that held so many back, and this dream would not be denied. From the minutes of the first meeting, quote, "A nonprofit organization was formed and given the name Better Homes of South Bend, Inc." Close quote. Author Gabrielle Robinson notes that it was the first African-American building cooperative in South Bend trying to, quote, "break through the wall of discrimination that relegated them to the poorest, most dilapidated parts of the city." Close quote. These families took a step that was bold and inspirational. For me, personally, knowing these men and women, the parents of my friends, fills me with a sense of pride that is deep and profound. These were the families of Elmer Street. Elmer Street, the North Side, the 1950-era story of a group of African Americans in the city of South Bend, Indiana, who formed a co-op challenging the Jim Crow of the North to fulfill their dreams of owning homes. The story continues right after this break.